Welcome to Mac and Blue, the cutting-edge podcast for the nation's builders, merging the realms of construction with exciting advancements in technology. Join us on a thrilling journey where we delve into the dynamic world of blockchain, AI, the metaverse, virtual and augmented reality, and their transformative impact on the industry. Our engaging discussions span a wide spectrum, covering not only construction, economic development, supply chain, and market segments, but also exploring the vibrant tapestry of diversity within the construction landscape. We shed light on the intersection of local politics and its profound influence on the construction sector, while championing the remarkable contributions of women and minorities in construction. For all things Mac and Blue, head to www.macandblue.com and don't forget to subscribe on YouTube. I'm your host, JJ Levinsky. Now let's get into it.
Hi everyone, welcome to Mac and Blue. I'm your host, JJ Levinsky, CEO and co-founder of Blue Wave. I'm lucky enough today to have Grene Martacco, who is the CEO of Concord General Contracting. Welcome, Grene.
Thank you.
Just a little background. I do this all the time. I talk about how I spy on people. So I've been spying on Grene for a long time in their company. It's kind of one of those unique situations where we're in the same biz. Technically, we're probably competitors at some token, but really not. Your company's got a great reputation in town, and you know that.
Yeah.
And also, before we get into the details, the reputation that you have as a leader about culture is kind of why I wanted to get you on. So before we get into all the fun stuff about you and the company,
yes.
Everyone wants to know the personal side of you.
Oh.
So we got to talk about how you grew up in Nebraska and
what
got you here to the Valley and all that fun stuff. So if you would, just take a little background, maybe talk about the family, especially the furry ones and things like that.
The little furry ones?
Yeah.
So I grew up in Nebraska, born and raised. My family all still lives back there. Nobody has left Nebraska except for me. So I went to school back there.
Do you have the Cornhusker plates on out in the parking lot?
I don't, but my parents think I do. So okay. We'll just say I do.
You don't have a tattoo of
no,
the Huskers?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't. No.
Okay.
No, I'm not that diehard. But when you're born in Nebraska, you bleed red, so you're not allowed not to be a Husker fan. So I am a Husker fan. But yes, I grew up there. I went to school. Even when I was going to school, I just never loved Nebraska. I grew up in a very, very rural town. Population 1,600 people. I graduated with a class of 42 people. So it was everybody knows everybody, and I just
shoot my 92 makes that look big.
See, I know that's what everyone always says. They're like, you look like small, small. I'm like, it's small, and it was a high school of like five different towns too.
Yeah.
So it's not even like one city. So I went to school and I started in the industry actually at an engineering firm back in Nebraska.
Okay.
And it was that year in 2003, 2004 that literally I was in my apartment complex. I lived a mile from my work. And it was such a bad winter that my car got high-centered in the parking lot three times. Like, I had to dig my car out three times.
For all the neophytes that don't know what high-centering is, that don't deal with snow, come on.
Yes, it's snow. So your car sits really low, and then you think, my car can go through that drift. And in fact, your car cannot go through that drift. So you're stuck.
Then you have the grenade teeter-totter.
Yes, and then wheels are just spinning, and you're just high-centered. So, yeah, so it was on that third time where literally I called my parents and I said, I'm moving away from here. I don't know where, but I'm moving. And this was in February, and I came out here in August of 2003. I had no family. I had a couple of friends that lived out here.
Paid or virtual?
Yeah, exactly. Paid.
Can I couch surf with you?
Is that yeah, it's pretty much. I was like, I'm moving here. I'm coming. No, I got a job before I came here.
Okay.
So I did.
Well, you're better than most. Then.
Yeah, I got a job. I was like, I have to be able to support myself because I knew my parents would not support me just randomly moving across.
You weren't
country.
Independently wealthy at the time.
I wasn't. Yeah, I don't know. Poor college student. You know, that sticks with you for a bit. And I came out here and I started at another engineering firm.
Okay.
And stayed there for a year and went to Concord, and that was kind of it.
So talk again, because we'll get into all the cool stuff you've done. During that transition, what was it? Describe for the audience how did the marriage happen, or how did it get consummated coming to Concord, and why?
So it was kind of serendipity, you know.
Ooh,
so
big word.
I know. I went to an SMPS event. And I sat next to a woman who was the current marketing coordinator at Concord.
Oh.
And she said, actually, I'm resigned. I just resigned from Concord, and my final 2 weeks are pretty much right now. And I was like, I'm sorry to hear that. And she's like, yeah, I'm moving on. You know, she was going, you know, to a different state and just kind of moving on with her next opportunity. And so I didn't, at that point, I started kind of looking because I was going to school at that point in time at night to get my MBA.
Oh.
And so I knew the company that I was at. They're phenomenal. I had a wonderful boss. But she was very honest with me that there wasn't a lot of room to move up. So I knew if I wanted to move up in my career, if I wanted to use these skills that I was getting with my MBA, that I was going to have to find another company. So then I started looking, and Danielle Ferraletto, who had just started Small Giants, she was recruiting at that time. And she got my name and called me up and said, hey, I have this opportunity at Concord. And it was at that moment where I was like, I just met their previous marketing coordinator. It's like all the stars just kind of aligned. And then from there, I just went and met Dale Marr, the current CEO at that point in time. And just, I fell in love with who he was as a leader. Great, authentic guy. And I thought, if I want to work with anyone, I want to work with him. So that's how I ended up there.
So then, early on, the relationship that you and Dale had, what was talked about or discussed, or was there nothing discussed at the time about a succession plan or all that, or did that all come later?
That all came later.
Okay, so we can get into that.
Yeah.
Then let me take a different tangent with you. Go back to the engineering firm that you were working with, and not to stereotype this, but we have to as part of the podcast. You know, we got to turn the dirt.
Totally get it.
And that is, I'm going to play the gender card, which is, was it that vertical movement that your peer told you about that wasn't available at that engineering, was it because of the organization, or was it because you were a woman?
It was the organization.
Okay.
And it was, you know, the person that they, you know, at that point in time, they were going to be putting a marketing manager. Mm-hmm. And I was just a marketing coordinator at that time.
Oh, okay.
And it was a skill set. I didn't have the skill set necessarily to even move up into that kind of way. And I think you start to learn about, you know, when I was really involved in SMPS, when I was at the engineering firm, you kind of learn about the different industries. You learn about architecture. You learn about engineering. You see construction. And for some reason, I just always gravitated, I think, towards construction. The people, just, they're very homegrown. They're very authentic people. And
ties to your upbringing, right?
Yeah. And the engineering is great, but as far as being social, not very social. And I'm a pretty social person.
For the audience's sake, what is a SMPS?
SMPS is Society for Marketing Professional Services.
There we go.
Yep.
Okay, there we go. So I think a lot of people would then say, well, geez, Grené, you came in as marketing and you're now CEO.
Yeah.
Okay, where's the technical divide and how have you bridged that? Come on, you get it all the time.
I do. I always get it.
So give us the story, and hopefully it's longer than 30 seconds because I think there's some meat to this story. Mm-hmm. Talk about just that element of growing into the CEO of Concord from a marketing perspective. Because breaking down the stereotypes of, oh, you know, I served 20 years as a super, then I got promoted to a PM, and then Uncle Bob retired, yep. And I just slid into the shoes.
Yep.
Not you.
No, I did not. I did not slide. My career, I don't say it hasn't been like moving up the ladder, or it hasn't been a clear path. It's more like a jungle gym. Like I'm over here, and then I kind of swung over here, and then I fell on my ass a couple times and got back up. And it all starts with, and I kind of already mentioned him, it started with Dale. You know, when I first came to Concord, CM at Risk was relatively new to our industry at that point in time still. Okay. And literally, they had already started doing a lot of the negotiated work, but they never had a true marketing company. Like, they just had a proposal person that would just put together these proposals. So he came in, basically said, look, you need to be doing marketing. Dale, who is a very honest person, said, I have no idea what that means, so go do marketing. So they stuck me in an office, and that's exactly what I did. Started doing marketing, started, you know, their proposals and stuff like that. At that point in time, there really wasn't social media or anything else like that. It was more like ads and, you know, then kind of going after the award submittals, just kind of getting our name a little bit more out there. And I mentioned at that point in time, too, when I was in my first year at Concord, I was going to school at night to get my MBA. And when I was in school, I absolutely fell in love with the strategic planning business classes. It was phenomenal. I had a great professors that kind of taught it. But for some reason, business has always, I just think it's fascinating how you can bring this group of people together and you're all working towards a common goal and you all want your business to be successful. And just the way that it all comes together is fascinating to me. So I was going to school and then I started, I would come to work and I'd start seeing, okay, we don't really have a direction here. You know, who are our clients? And I would start asking the questions to Dale and...
Well, hold on. What was Concord's reputation at that time? As describe the vertical.
So, small.
Schools, public work.
Schools and churches.
Yeah, okay.
Schools and churches.
I was baiting you because I know what it is.
Schools and churches.
Yeah, okay.
And we were.
Yeah.
That's what we were building.
I remember when I moved to town.
Schools and churches.
I remember Concord was at every church when I moved to town.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And that was our image. Yeah. And what was funny is that when people would ask you out in public what you build, everybody who worked at Concord, schools and churches,
okay.
Even though we were doing other stuff, but yes, that was...
And we all, it's important because all of us in our industry, we get labeled that way.
We do.
Yeah.
We
get labeled by the vertical.
Yeah.
Instead of the company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, not that I don't want to jump fast forward.
No, go ahead.
17 years, I've been at Concord, almost 18, and we still are combating that. And
it's not a negative.
It's not a negative. But when you look at our numbers, it's like, only 25% at schools and 15%, you know, of our revenue is driven by churches. Like, we do a whole lot of other stuff, but yeah, it's just, that's the way it is.
Sorry, I took you off your story.
I'm totally off story now.
I don't remember where we were.
I don't either, but it was fun. Oh, Dale. Oh,
yes, Dale.
Yes. Keep going. So I was going to school, loved strategic planning. And then at that point in time, they started having me kind of go out in front of clients a little bit more, going to business development events.
So not like RFPs, RFQs, but just... True networking.
True networking. Okay. Going to ABA events and stuff like that. And I would run into clients or I'd run into other people, you know, within the industry. And they would automatically ask, who is Concord? Well, going back to, well, we're a little bit of everything. You know, we build churches, schools. But it got me thinking as, as I'm sitting in class every night listening to having, you know, a clear definition of who your customers are, knowing who you are as a company. I realized that we didn't have core values hanging on the wall. We didn't have a mission statement. I asked Dale and the leadership team at that point in time, who was our customer? Like, what do we want to build? And they said, everything. Everyone is our customer. And I was like, okay, that's a lot of people. The valley is pretty vast. So I need some sort of target. And then it was, the recession hit. And... Oh. Honestly, that's when we didn't have a lot of work going on. We were, taking any small little job that we could just so we could keep people. And I posed the question at that point in time, can we go through a strategic plan? Like nothing big, not a technical strategic plan, but let's kind of lay out who we are as a company.
So at that time, who would you describe? You don't have to give names, but how many people, what did the organization look like from a C-suite at that time?
The C-suite was, at that time was Dale, our CEO. Yep. Jason was our chief operating officer. We had a CFO as well. And then we had a president down in our Tucson office, John Nyman.
So five of you?
Yes.
Basically.
And I was not on leadership at that point in time.
Yeah, but marketing, you were probably brought in the inner circle.
I was brought in the inner circle quite a bit.
Okay. Okay, so then how did you guys survive the recession?
By basically little projects here and there.
Okay.
It literally, I remember at one point in time, we don't hard bid a lot of work.
Right.
But we were hard bidding work there.
Yeah, everyone did.
And it was strictly just so we could keep a superintendent.
Yeah.
It was
because you didn't want to lose your people.
Yeah.
What, how did your role, because marketing changes dramatically in that.
It did.
What did you find out about yourself during that time?
I became more of a support system because you would have superintendents who were terrified of where they were going after their job was over. And the first stop is typically marketing, because most of our work is being driven out of proposals. And you really do. They would just come into your office and be like, what are we submitting on? Are we proposing on anything? And when there was stuff that came in the door, even if you felt like you weren't qualified, you felt like you had to put an RFQ in place. Just
keep the mojo.
Yeah, to show people that we're trying. Yeah. And it's hard. And it was a lot of education piece, too. You know, our past leadership, and this is no fault of their own, but they weren't very communicative with our entire staff. So they wouldn't necessarily talk about what we were hearing out in the industry. They kind of, you know, kind of shut the door behind even saying that things were bad. And when one RFQ was, you know, put in, that 15 to 20 submissions were being considered for that particular project, there was none of that honesty coming out. And for me, when people would sit down with me and have those hard conversations, like, I have a family, I need this job, what are we doing? You have to be very open with them about the landscape of what we were dealing with. It was hard.
So as I listen to you, how do I say this? Through everyone's lows, you find a little bit better about yourself, right?
Yeah.
So coming out of the recession then, let's break down the next time frame. Post-recession to pre-COVID or pre-2020. Okay, is that a lot of change probably happened. We'll break that down, and then we'll do another thing, and then we'll kind of go into some of what I want to call the meat of what I wanted to talk to you about. So during that stage, at what point, I assume somewhere in there, maybe I'm jumping ahead, that's when transition started happening with the C-suite and where you eventually became CEO. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, so go into a little bit of that then, if you would.
So John, Dale, and Eric, who were our previous leadership that were on the next to retire, they actually wanted to retire during the recession, but the recession threw them off. They couldn't retire from a financial perspective. So at that point in time, we completely tabled all discussion as far as succession planning, focused on the company, focused on that strategic plan.
But you had talked about it.
We had talked about it.
But just very high level.
High level. Okay. High level of how we were going to sell. So at that point in time, I like to say that they put golden handcuffs on a few of us. And it was me and my other partner, JV Nyman. We were given golden handcuffs during that time, which is in 2012. They sold a portion of the stock to us. And they said, this is just to keep you in your seats, but we know that you're going to be leadership in this company at some point in time. We just don't know in what capacity and how that's all going to play out. Because again, from a financial perspective, we didn't even know.
But it was all an internal deal. There was no outside capital that came in.
There was no outside capital. We were evaluating an ESOP at that point in time. Yeah. So we were still looking into an ESOP, what that means financially for a company, how do you sell to an ESOP and everything like that. So that started at that moment in time. Pretty much, I would say those discussions started in about 2010, 2011.
Okay.
So, but again, they wanted to keep us there because we were going to be kind of key components to that internal sell. So what happened then is, you know, the markets started coming back. Mm-hmm. The recession started lifting. You know, things had a little bit more of a cheery, I would say, atmosphere to everything. And so we had our strategic plan up and ready to go. And we came out of the gates from the recession really, really strong, because we simply sat back and planned during that time, defined who Concord was, defined why did we have such a stellar reputation for all of these years? Mm. And we have never went through, you know, that many bumps. Like, how is that?
I know it's probably a whole hour in itself, but
yeah.
What were some of those core elements you guys found?
People. We operate so much differently at Concord that we couldn't even define our culture at that point in time, but we knew we had something incredibly special, because we saw people that would come into Concord's door and just pick up like they'd been there for 10 years. And then we saw people come in, and just within a matter of days, we just knew it wasn't going to work. And it was something about just the people, the way that we work, and our belief system that we are a true team with our clients, with our subcontractors, with our architects. It's just this feeling that we knew was different. And everybody you talk to, it was, you know, when we were doing our research, you know, with our strategic plan and everything, you know, when we would talk to their clients, and they alluded to the same thing. We're just, we work differently. We operate differently. So yeah, we came out of the strategic plan, or we came out of the recession with a strategic plan, with clear definition of who we were, what sets us apart. Through that first, strategic plan, we developed something called the Ultimate Client Experience, and that honestly is something that is still alive and active at Concord. But we realized what that was is we just defined what sets us, what makes us different.
Yeah.
We would go into classrooms and teach kids about construction. We would have construction days with kids. You know, we would be intentional about making sure that we celebrated those milestone moments, whether it was, you know, beam signings or groundbreakings or ribbon cutting ceremonies. And we wouldn't wait for the client to offer us that. We went in the interview going, yeah, we're going to build your building, just like everybody else that we're up against is going to build your building. Here's why we're different. We're going to celebrate with you. And our revenue between that 2011, you know, and looking to the next, you know, 5 years past that, we grew by 110%. Larger project sizes. I remember we won our first ground up brand new school. And that was just like that moment where I remember us sitting, I think this was about 2012 when we were awarded that. I remember us all sitting in the office because we had basically heard that we won the project before it was officially announced. And all of us are just like, oh my gosh, like we made it. Like we made it. And it was just such a defining
moment.
Was it,
again, for audience sake, was it a... like a normal unified district, charter, or private school?
It was for Tempe Elementary School District.
Nice.
And we had our sights on that school. And when we were going for that proposal, we did anything we possibly could. We went and talked to neighbors.
Yeah.
You know, got heard all of these stories. And we went in, and I still get chills when I think about that interview, because our team, like, we went in there and we just...
We
just rocked it.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't been in an interview since that, you know? Yeah. Like, that has been that, like, perfect.
There comes a time when dreams become a reality, when you see your vision materialize into a true work of art. And the only way to get there is to choose a general contractor who shares that same vision and knows how to bring it to life. At Blue Wave, we aren't so big that we've forgotten where we've come from, and we aren't so small that we can't care for your projects regardless of their size. When your vision deserves safety, perfection, timeliness, and expertise in order to become a reality, trust Blue Wave to get it done right the first time.
It's funny you say that, because if we sat here and if we switched our seats with all of our peers, everyone has that one story, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was always some glass ceiling that everyone broke.
Yeah, it was.
And so it's cool. Some people have multiple glass ceilings they broke, but I'm so glad you celebrated that.
Oh, it was phenomenal. I mean, I still, just sitting here, I still get chills thinking about it.
So at some point, let's go back to, and then we can get into some of the fun stuff. So would you say that somewhere in there is that when some of the shakeup had, or was that when you were made CEO then shortly thereafter?
No. Okay. No. I was, so basically we started reevaluating the succession plan in 2015 when we felt like we had our finances kind of more in place and everything was moving. John, Dale, and Eric had set a date at that point in time. Our CFO had actually set a date a year before John, Dale, and Eric. Dale had said in 2020, I'm out. Basically, I'll finish out 2019, I'm out.
Okay. 2020 was
so
the date.
That was, yep. So in 2015, we started planning for that transition. We hadn't defined who was gonna be doing roles yet.
More just the exit.
More just the exit plan. Financial standpoint. So in 2015, that's when we started talking about the transition and how this was going to play out. At that point in time, they also sold JV and I more stock. So we became shareholders with John, Dale, and Eric, and Jason.
Oh, you had the silver and the golden handcuffs.
Now it was like you weren't going anywhere. Like your house is on the line. Here you are. Like, you, good luck leaving. And so, yeah, you know, I wish I would have consulted with somebody about that before buying into a company, because there's a lot of logistics that goes into that, but it worked out. But yeah, it's convoluted.
That's a good tangent right there. I mean, we could talk about...
I mean...
Because that whole thing of where you went back is, you know, you were non-traditional in the construction space to begin with, but you're right. We don't spend enough time talking about equity and... what that means, and oh, you're an owner now, you're rich, and it's like, well, hold on, you have no idea. I've got, you know, what little personal assets I have are leveraged to the hilt, and I'm more worried now than I ever was.
You know, and it was clearly defined, I think, when I went at that point in time to refinance my house. And I had to get approval from my business bank to temporarily lift the lien on my house. Oh, yeah. Just so I could refinance, like that stuff that no one ever talked to me about.
And then, and I went to grad school too, and they don't
discuss
that.
And
MBAs, they don't teach you that stuff.
No, and nobody does. I'm like, we could have a whole podcast on here's the pros and cons of buying a business, like, and here's what happens when you do buy that business. But regardless, it worked out. Tangent off that one. We started talking about it, and throughout those discussions, we decided in 2017 that we were, in fact, going to go to an ESOP. So that was really the first step in that transition and that succession plan. Again, we hadn't clearly defined the roles yet, but it was simply the financial way of making this happen.
If I may, I don't know if you know, I had Barry on before
from
Chase.
Yes.
Did you consult with Barry at all at the time?
We went back and forth a couple times. We actually had really great consultants too that we were talking to as well.
I think Barry did theirs in what, 2014 or something like
they
that?
They did. Yeah, I think it was. I can't remember when. Okay. Well, I know they went 100%. They may have pre-funded. I don't know if they pre-funded. I don't know the logistics.
It's just nice to hear, like, you know, when we collaborate with our friends and peers.
So. Yep.
I was just curious if you, anyway, keep going.
Yeah. And we still actually, from time to time, we'll still talk about, because we, you know, there's a whole bunch of logistics that go into place after you become an ESOP.
Has anyone else approached you for advice on that?
A lot.
A lot.
It's an attractive way to do, especially the mindset of people not wanting to own companies in that traditional capacity anymore. It's getting stronger.
Would you say, as long as we're on that topic, do you see it as much in the fellow GC or more so now in the trades?
I see it more in the GC and manufacturing.
Okay.
There's a lot. When you look at the statistics, as far as we're involved in the National Center for, you know, ESOP organizations, when you look at the percentage, manufacturing is number one, GC is number two. Mm. And then it goes down there. Architecture isn't very far, you know, they're pretty far down, but it's very attractive to the trades as well, because it builds that ownership.
Yeah. I don't even know where the hell I was.
I don't know.
Oh. Let's jump. Okay, so let's get to, when did you, let's get to the CEO part.
Oh, yeah.
So tell the story.
So we started pre-funding the ESOP in 2018, and that's when everyone was like, okay, so we're going through a transition, and now you're putting money aside to do this first sale in 2020. So who's going to be our leaders? Like, basically, this was driven by our people, because our people are like, okay, John, Dale, and Eric, you know how it is.
Yeah.
It creates a little bit of uneasiness when your leadership is saying, I'm retiring, and you don't really see coming up behind them who's next. And so we basically sat in a room and said, okay, who's going to do what? At that point in time, Jason Beaver... he had been at Concord. He's been there for 20 years. So he had been there for a few years before me. He was really the director of operations. He was Dale's right-hand man. Everyone thought he's going to be the CEO. Like, it's just the natural. He's been here. He's the technical guy. He's the construction guy. He's going to be the CEO. And really, when we sat back and realized, okay, what does a COO do? What does a CEO do? you know, we already had pretty much clarification of the CFO role or controller role. We already had
that. That one's a little easier to define.
That one's easier. Like, you either love numbers or you absolutely hate them.
Yeah.
So that was a clear, I was not going to do that at all. That would be awful. So we sat down, and really it was kind of in Jason's hands, and he said, I don't have the visionary. I don't have that focus on culture. I don't see it as that important. But you live and breathe this culture. You live and breathe the people. You live and breathe knowing that we're not thinking about what we're doing today, but you're thinking about what we're going to do in 3, 5, 10 years. And so at that point in time, it was kind of a gamble. I mean, I wasn't even 40 yet. And basically, we went in and said, JV's going to be president, Jason's going to be COO, Grenade's going to be CEO. John Dale and Eric were phenomenal, and they said, we trust you. This is going to be your company. If you feel like that's the way you go, like you've done great things for Concord, then let's go. So we announced it to the company in May of 2018. We announced it at our company meeting. I was hesitant. I didn't know how our employees were going to respond because I wasn't technical, right?
Do you remember at that time, Grenade, how many people was your team?
We had total about 40, I think.
40
probably
at the time.
Under 40.
So plus or minus, though.
Plus or minus. Okay.
Just for context for the audience.
Yep. And I remember like on that day in May, like we were, and I was like, oh gosh, the next slide is the org chart, the next slide is the org chart. And literally they put it up on the screen and everyone was just like, oh, that's great. Like, yes, yes, yes. And the amount of support.
You mean
that
you didn't beta it at all? Come on. No one leaked it at all?
No.
Oh,
well,
bullshit.
They did. They did. But they didn't. They thought because Jason had been there, he's the technical guy, it's the natural progression, right? Construction. You want the technical guy running the company, right? And that's automatically, though, the people just came up and just said, yep, you're the one. You're the one that keeps this company going from a cultural standpoint. You're the one that makes us not lose focus of why we do what we do every single day.
So you're the glue in the fire.
If that's what you put it. Yes, that's what I am.
Well, they're complimentary. I mean,
yeah,
right? It's like fire and glue, glue to hold
it
together.
It together.
Macy, come on.
I know. I like it. Some days I feel like I'm falling apart, but most of the time I'm good.
All right, so cool. Now we get into the fun stuff.
Yeah.
All right, so what your DNA, what's the, everyone wants to know, it's like, okay, Grenade, you're now running this ship. Not like you hadn't before, but you're running the ship, and what are you so proud about that you do differently, or what are those rose-colored glasses that you see through that no one else can? Or not that no one else can, but what is that? And give us some examples, some stories from, you know, call it 2018 to where we are now of what makes you so special.
What makes me so special?
Other than riding the short bus back in Nebraska.
Yeah, I was. All of them were short buses back there. Gosh, you know, it has been a progression.
Okay.
And I think, you know, so in 2019, I spent that entire year shadowing Dale.
Oh, you did?
I did.
Okay.
And him sharing contacts with me. And what I realized through that is, you know, Dale was a very, very vulnerable person. And he would say, look, I have never been a true CEO. So you shouldn't probably mock everything that I did as the right way to do things. Because he's like, I was a construction guy. He was a superintendent.
But don't you think that humility and that vulnerability, that's almost 100%. The core of it?
That's exactly what that's exactly what I took away from that.
Yeah.
Is that he...
Don't fake it.
He created this culture. Yeah. You know, he was the one that... Well, actually, he says that he sustained this culture from Jim and Gary Jackson, who founded the company. You know, and so he brought the culture on. And what was really cool when Dale addressed the audience and said, look, I've taken Concord to where it is today, but I can't take it any further. And these leaders are going to take it to the next step.
Pretty humble.
Oh, he's just, have you ever met Dale?
No, I haven't.
He's a humble man.
Yeah.
He's living his best retirement life now. So I'm very happy for him. But yeah, so what are my defining steps? 2020, I took over January 1st, and life was going to be amazing. So you know that book, you know, the presidency book of, you know, the first 90 days.
Oh, yeah.
What are you going to do in your first 90 days? Well, you want to know what I did in my first 90 days? I was meeting with people, was talking to them about what works at Concord. What do you want to see changed at Concord?
Here's my vision plan.
Yes, it was amazing. And then March came, and that just went all to hell.
Yeah.
That was the first learning experience of I have always been very proactive. I am a proactive person when it comes to planning a vacation. I'm proactive when it comes to planning for the next 3 years. I do not like to be reactive because I feel like if you're reactive, you're just throwing stuff out there and you're hoping that it sticks. Well, March of 2020, I had to become just nothing but reactive.
Who didn't?
Exactly. And it was a moment where literally I remember standing in line at Costco waiting to grab
the last thing of toilet paper.
Of toilet paper or cleaning supplies for our crews out on site. So I remember that was the moment where I had to put myself aside.
Yeah.
And say, okay, you go to that Costco, I'm going to this Sam's. We got to get whatever we can, cleaning supplies we can, to support our superintendents, because our superintendents right now are our priority. We are in an industry that's not going to shut down. Our sites can't shut down. So how do we support them as much as possible? So we were getting the hand washers out to the sites. We were driving around, you know, every single day delivering care package or, you know, sanitation packages. To keep them safe. We were modifying, putting up posters. We were talking about our new safety standards. And it literally, March to June was a total blur. I don't even remember it.
I don't know if anyone remembers that.
Yeah.
I would even say it went deeper than that. I mean, yeah. We all know it went deeper, but
yeah.
Yeah.
But I remember now, and that was probably my first big learning experience, is that when you're a leader, you need to learn how to pivot and pivot fast. And I was never much of a pivoter. I was always a planner. Like, nope, I this is the plan. We set it in plan. Like, we're going to do it. This is the way we do it. You're set with that. Like, nobody wants to sit down and talk to you about the future. They want to talk to you about what's happening right now. And then after you got through, you know, kind of the reactionary stuff, then you started having to be a different kind of leader. Because you would listen to stories about how, you know, their mom has congestive heart failure. And if I come into the office or I'm around somebody that, you know, is exposed, you know, that could put their, you know, in serious health issues. And then November of 2020 hit, and that hardest day of my life by far. I don't know if anything will ever get to be harder than when we lost Russ Nyman. And he was John Nyman, our president at the time, my partner, JV's brother, 37 years old, three young kids, and he passed away. And having to pull everyone in a conference room and having to make phone calls to complete grown men who are crying on the other line, you just crumble.
Yeah.
But I look back and I remember I didn't cry once that entire day because I stayed strong. And then I went home that night and I just completely crumbled.
They probably had to call flood control.
Yeah. And that whole year, for as shitty as it was, taught me so much about showing up authentically.
Yeah.
You know, being able to cry with people and being able to, you know, support them in any way you can, or sometimes just say, I'm sorry, I'm here for you, you know, and realizing that work, while it's important, all the noise outside was so much more important at that point in time to deal with. That work is always going to be there, but the stuff that we were dealing with personally was huge.
So I would imagine that you look back, you know, you can look back now. After that, your company probably got stronger.
It did.
Yeah.
It did.
It's as horrible as it was.
Mm-hmm.
You probably grew as a family.
We did.
Yeah.
We grew as a family. And you know what's so great is that we still now can be out on site talking about something like, oh, remember that time when Russ did this or Russ did that? Like, we grew so much because you go through that and you see people at their most vulnerable moments, you know? And it just strengthened our culture so much. Strengthened. It hurt our culture because we lost a, he was a huge piece to us, yeah. But it strengthened us so much too.
Well, this is going to sound kind of cold and callous, but did you also not learn that, how do you say this? Yes, you have to invest in the people, but you also, back to your planning and pivoting, mm-hmm. is great leadership. You know, you have to plan for the worst case scenario, which is what happens if the avocado truck takes me out?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And it sucks because you have to almost get kicked in the you know where.
You do.
In the hooey.
Yeah.
To get to that point of your lowest common denominator where then you look and go, hold it. If we did it for Russ, we're going to have to do it for Grenade. We're going to have to do it for any of the other partners.
Yep.
And you see the most successful companies, they deal with that mortality mm-hmm. ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
And it sucks.
Yeah, it does.
It sucks because it tears your guts out and your heart out. But but again, you see day in and day out, the ones that conquer it mm-hmm. are sitting having these conversations of and the accolades that you guys have had.
Yeah.
There comes a time when dreams become a reality. When you see your vision materialize into a true work of art. And the only way to get there is to choose a general contractor who shares that same vision and knows how to bring it to life. At Blue Wave, we aren't so big that we've forgotten where we've come from, and we aren't so small that we can't care for your projects regardless of their size. When your vision deserves safety, perfection, timeliness, and expertise in order to become a reality, trust Blue Wave to get it done right the first time.
So let's go a little granular for a while. What are some of the like the we've kind of that's like 30,000 feet.
It is.
But what the audience would love to say, all right, Grenade, but give us examples and stories of like what you've done internally. Like, are there things that you can talk about either in the ESOP structure or the culture structure, or maybe again your lens, the color of your lens is mm-hmm. just a little bit different that allows someone to look into what you guys are doing and saying. Not to copy or emulate you, but inspiration.
Yeah.
So what can you say?
So I challenge our team all the time. One of my favorite things is to say, you know, have you the book Start With Why by Simon Sinek?
Yeah, great one.
I love that book because it's classic. It'll last for years. You know, it'll never go out of style. But I had a group of 16 people. This last June, because I'm so fascinated with Concord and I'm so fascinated with our culture and why it works mm-hmm. and why are we different? Why is it one person can come in and just pick up, you know, like they've been there and then another one just, you know, is out in 10 days because they just don't fit. Why is that? So I made everyone read the book, Start With Why, and we're talking about superintendents. I made them read the book, Start With Why. It was grueling. The amount
Did you get them audible?
Complaints that I had to hear, the amount of cuss words that I had to hear, the amount of this is stupid that I had to hear. But at the end of the day, when I locked him in a room for 8 hours, we had to start with why, it was enlightening the conversations we started.
Who facilitated
I
that?
I did.
Okay.
Yep. So let
me ask you, do you think, and be mm-hmm. honest about this, in hindsight, you facilitating it, was that best, or would you have a third party do it?
It was best for that discussion.
Okay, got it.
Because a facilitator would not know anything about our culture. And anybody who's facilitating that, when you're talking about why, you know, think about, have you ever read the book?
Oh, yeah.
Like the brain has a portion that doesn't have language. Mm-hmm. So you have these people that are trying to put language to this part of the brain that doesn't have language. So if you had a facilitator outside party, they'd be like, I don't know. We just take care of our clients differently. Like it would just never work.
No, and just so you know, I wasn't baiting you or the audience, but it comes up and this is where I'm going to go. I agree with you, by the way.
Yeah.
not to patronize you, but on other things, if I'm going to go on a tangent and explain my the reason why I asked you the question is, let me ask you a question first. Do you have an operating system or a business management system in place, a formal one?
Yes.
So you have like an EOS model?
Yes.
Okay. You know the difference, because a lot of times in the EOS model, they say don't do it internally.
Yeah.
Have an implementer, facilitator, yeah. those kind of things.
Yep.
And so that's why I'm asking the question, because when you have the touchy-feely wise stuff, it probably is better to come from leadership. Mm-hmm. Over here, an EOS model or some sort of, you know, or
yep.
equal.
Yep.
That you see a lot of companies go, no. If you and I were doing that as CEO, yep. we'd pooch it.
Yep.
Right? It's like, no.
Yeah.
That is a point where a third party needs to
is
be
valuable.
That. Right. 100%. So that's why I was going down this
yep.
this question.
Yep. 100%.
Okay. Shit, I don't even know what I was going to ask next.
I don't know, but anyway.
Okay, so that was one example. Great example of mm-hmm. the why. Keep going, though. Was there a closure to the why?
There was. There was. So our why is we exist to change the definition of a team. And when you think about us, when you think about a team, a lot of times, and we used, mostly because, again, it's the easy model, you think of the NFL, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're all a team. They show up on the field. And then when you go to commercial break, who do you see on the commercials? You see those people promoting, you know, their personal brand and their egos, and they're selling either, you know, State Farm insurance or, you know, whatever.
Oh, geez, that wasn't a good example.
Yeah, but
discount yeah, double check.
Yeah, but they're
maybe they'll sponsor us, Grenade. State Farm, if you're State watching, Farm, we want some
State
money.
State Farm, red shirts, pants.
Yeah.
But I mean, you see them, and then you're like, are they truly a team? No. Like, they're not, because they're getting all of these benefits and all these sponsorships on the outside, and they're very ego driven and everything like that. And so when we looked at the definition of a team, like, it's kind of leave your egos at the door. Like, we always, when we were, these conversations were so amazing, because, you know, some of the, one of our project managers, I remember him saying, you know, I've been to a lot of industry events, and other GCs, our competitors, will stand up and go, I'm the number one contractor, you know, and we would never stand up and say we're the number one contractor. Like, we're one of the hundreds of contractors that are out there, you know, and we're not for everyone. Just like, you know, we choose our clients just as much as our clients choose us. There's certain markets that we won't even go near, because it just isn't a good team relationship. And so when we looked at that, and we looked at our team, and we looked at our why, that's who we've always been. We've just been always just kind of different in our culture standpoint. So that was pretty defining, and that just happened this last year.
Oh, good.
So that was really cool. You know, and then what makes us different? I am not the type of leader that lives in the day-to-day. I let my leadership team, I have a phenomenal leadership team behind me, puts out fires, deals with all of those fires, you know, if there's issues on budget, scheduling, everything like that, they do that. I am the visionary. I am the one looking for what's next with Concord. How, you know, this year we're going to be $140 million, which is amazing, but how do we keep that sustainable?
Yeah.
Because
someone has to do it.
Somebody's has to do it. And while we're booming down here in the valley, that it isn't always going to be like that. Yep. There's going to be a stabilization at some point. You know, I think all of us are kind of surprised that we're still going the way we are. But, you know, the point is that we're at 140 million. We have staffed up to be 140 million. Now, how do we stay sustainable? Because when we hire people at Concord, our intent is for them to retire at Concord. We do not want to do mass layoffs. We don't hire for a peak in boom and of construction right now and then just get rid of people. That is not the way that we operate.
Do you think do you think the ESOP structure has helped you attract and retain?
100%.
Okay.
And along with that, though, is a bigger discussion as far as how to attract the young talent that is 23 years old, 24 years old, and not thinking about retirement in 40 years. You know, for 40 years, they're like, I don't care about an ESOP. Like, so us as leaders, we did this 2 years ago. I sat back and said, okay, look, we have all of these young people. Us selling a retirement plan is perfect for somebody who's in their mid 40s, 50s, where you want that stability. You want to know that, you know, you're set up for retirement. It doesn't matter to somebody who just came out of college. what matters to them. So that came into more of a generational talk that we had amongst our leadership team. Matters to them, flexibility. They want to make sure that they're not tied to their seats from 7 to 5 every single day. They want to make sure that they have time, PTO time, to have experiences and everything else. And we made sure that we put those front and center with our benefits when you come to work at Concord. Mm. That, yes, we are an ESOP. We're the strong team. You're part of the company's success. You benefit off the company's success. But at the end of the day, we also realize that you have a life outside of work. And so we have, across the board, flexibility with all of our people. And we looked at our PTO benefits. There's a 6-year vesting period for you to be 100% vested, which is where you see that big dollar amount at the bottom. Mm-hmm. We put in place at 7 years, you get a 2-week sabbatical on top of your 4 weeks vacation. So you're getting 6 weeks of vacation. Because we figured if you get them there, they're there for 7 years. There's something magical about that 7 years, the vesting of an ESOP. But at the same point, you just took that 20-something into their 30s, where they're starting to think about a family, buying a house, and that stability becomes more important. And so we started thinking about it kind of in that holistic way of how do we make sure that it benefits them right now for what they want in their life, but also in their future, and staying and keeping them at Concord.
That was good.
Thanks.
It was so good. I kind of lost my train of thought of like what I wanted to ask you on the next question. Go back to I'm trying to think of what, trying to put into words what I was thinking about it with the culture thing. With you being in the visionary role, mm-hmm. how can you describe how, again, the team now has taken the Grenier vision, mm-hmm. and what have you seen them do, whether it's the ESOP, the team, how have they transposed, taken what your baseline was and transposed that into the next round of that culture? Do you have examples? Or
Yeah, I'm trying to think of all of these examples. So I'll use, I'll start with kind of outside of the operations perspective. Okay. And I'll start with business development and marketing. And having those discussions with them and saying, first of all, I am a very hands-off person. So I'll sit here and I'll cast my vision, I'll cast who we are, our why, what it means to our company and everything else, and then I'll ask them to, you know, kind of right. define and put that into action.
Let me interrupt you for a second. Uh-huh. That hands-off approach, do you think that's typical or atypical for your role specifically in the construction space?
I think it's not very typical at all.
Yeah, I would agree.
Mostly because there's a type A person that feels like they need to control everything and everyone. And that's not me. And honestly, that's not our entire leadership team.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have a level of maturity to be self-motivated in your career to work at Concord, because you're not going to get a lot of, I'll support you 100%, but if you expect me to come in and write down today what we're doing and tomorrow what you're going to be doing, that's not going to work out.
It's not an adult daycare.
It's not an adult daycare. No, no, no.
There are no diapers at Concord.
There are no diapers. So true. So I'll use the example of...
Sorry. Yes, go back to the example.
Marketing.
Okay.
Where we didn't really have a presence, you know, even about a year and a half ago, it was kind of bleak. And I remember sitting down with our marketing team at that point, who was relatively new, you know, all within their first year at Concord, and just saying, look, here's the ultimate client experience. Here's what Concord is all about. You know, we are all about our clients. We're all about celebrating construction. We're all about people, you know, our employees, everything else. So when you're talking about, you know, we build stuff, that's great, but that's what we do. And we're Concord General Contracting. Anybody can kind of put two and two together that we build stuff. So what is it that is different? And it really comes into, you know, the people that work within our organization and our teams and how that translates to our clients and celebrating with our clients and the end users when they get a new facility. So when you look at our, you know, social media, they've done a fantastic job of showing who we are as a culture. I'll use one concrete example because people just loved it. And I don't know how many clients emailed me and said that was you knocked it out of the park. We did a Christmas video this past year. And our marketing communications coordinator, she came up with this fantastic idea that all revolved around our why and our core values. And within each of the clips of the video were all of our people. And it wasn't it focused on construction and how many projects we completed and stuff like that, but it also focused on how many of our employees traveled outside of the country, how many of our employees added a new grandchild or niece or a nephew or a son or a daughter, you know, so we had little baby pictures. And you know, we talked about all of these things, like it talked about the company, but it also focused on us as a team. And that right there was like a true, like, they get it. They get it because I didn't do anything. I literally said, I want a video instead of a Christmas card this year. And they were gone and they did it. So it was that. And then you go to meetings where your business development people take you to these meetings. And I turn into just kind of like eye candy because I just kind of sit there. And they just tell them why Concord is different. It makes your heart like swell because you're like, I feel like I should be doing something, but they're doing all the hard work for me and they're doing a great job. So I don't really have anything to add. So it's just, they get it, you know? And it's so funny too, because when you talk about, when you go out to project sites and you're talking to superintendents and when you, you know, hand them a spot award or say thank you for something and tie it to one of your core values, most people would think that superintendents are like, I don't know. But at the end of the day, everybody wants to hear that they're doing a good job and that they're being recognized. And it makes such an impact when you tie it to our core values or who we are as a team and everything like that. And I've learned to be very intentional when I'm talking to people and when I give any sort of recognition of saying why.
Yeah.
You know, not just saying, hey, we're recognizing you. Congratulations, you did a great job on that video. But literally showing them why.
Yeah, you talking about how you're tying it to the values or anything. That is special because you're right. Everyone wants to know that.
Yeah. There's not one person out there. I don't care if you're, you know, the oldest and grouchiest superintendent out there. They just want to be told that they're doing a good job. And we all do.
With the few minutes we have left.
Yes.
One more question, then actually maybe two. But the first one is, you described almost a 5-year succession planning, if I read my notes correctly.
Yeah, it was.
What's the advice to everyone out there on succession planning? Other than start yesterday.
Start yesterday and do not make it 5 years.
Okay.
Here's why.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah, the captain of why. Why?
We were tired. By the time 2020 came along, we're just over it. I mean, this was a 5-year succession plan. In that same
almost
transition.
Almost a failure to launch.
Oh,
would
almost.
You say that?
Oh, almost. Yeah, yeah. 100%. Okay. And I think the ESOP helped us because we started pre-funding and we committed to a sale.
So it almost forced you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could see that if you would have stayed private, or you know what I mean. Stayed just with a traditional equity play.
Yep.
You guys could have kicked the can forever.
Forever.
Yeah.
Forever. So I would recommend not to do that. Two reasons. Number one, it exhausted the entire leadership. The leadership that was being replaced was like, I just want to retire. The people that were here were like, can you just get out of our way so we can take over? And it wasn't hostile or anything like that.
But it weared on everyone.
But it weared. We need the space. Can you get out of your office? It weared. And so it weared on us as individuals. And number two, it weared on our entire company. Because
your team saw it.
Yeah, they saw it. Because especially in 2019, when Dale was still there, he was still the CEO, but I was pretty much making all the decisions. It was just hard. It was hard. I would say 3 years is a sweet spot. Because you do need some sort of overlap. You do need to have those hard discussions. I mean, we had a lot of hard discussions, but you know, behind the doors that selling a company is not easy.
No.
Agreeing to a sale price is not easy. looking at financial goals from people that are on retirement to people that are not even here on retirement, it's hard discussions, hard. So it's taxing. 3 years.
Yeah.
3 years.
Got it.
Yep.
All right, final question.
Yeah.
What did I not ask you today that you'd love to share with the audience?
Oh,
either about you, your organization, the future?
The future. We do not build churches and schools. We build churches and schools.
But do not label us.
But we build so much more. And I think what right now, what I am most excited about right now for Concord is the fact that we have two sets of clients. And this isn't market related. We have one set of clients that knows Concord for the last 52 years. And we have the other set of clients right now that literally have only known us for 5 years because of new relationships that we built. Those new relationships are so easy because they just look at us and they're like, you're a huge contractor. Yeah. You do over $100 million worth of work, you know? But we still have those clients over here that you only do $30 million worth of work, you know? So it's fun because I like a challenge. I like to change the image. And right now, the image that we're changing is so phenomenal. Like, it's just... it just gives me goosebumps, and it gives me so much excitement. But I will say, too, about I love a good challenge, and when you say we're a $140 million contractor, we're not going to go past – we're not going to go under that anymore. Like, we are a $140 million contractor, and in our strategic plans, we already have it in place of how we're going to make that sustainable and how we're going to expand, you know, Concord, you know, across the state. And it's just where we're going right now – I think I've been saying this for the last few months, and I just kind of want to pinch myself. We have the strongest team I've ever seen. I have never seen a stronger team at Concord, and I've been there for almost 18 years. We have a company that is so incredibly diverse as far as ages, and we have a lot of momentum with the, you know, our younger generation bringing these new ideas into play. You know, it's so exciting to see the transformation that we're going for. And I remember when I first started at Concord, you know, years and years ago, the one thing that Dale, you know, said to me at Concord, when I started at Concord, I said, why is it named Concord? And he said, oh, that was Jim and Gary Jackson who founded the company. And Jim Jackson, who was the visionary of Concord, he didn't want to name it Jackson Construction. He wanted to name it something, a name that would be sustainable because he knew Concord would go well beyond his years. So we named it Concord, which means with unity. And every time I think about that, I'm like, I don't know if it's true or not, but I hope it is true that Dale wasn't telling me just a story. But every time I think about that, I think it's awesome to think that 52 years ago, this guy who had five people working for him, you know, created this name because he knew in 52 years that, you know, we'd be growing to something different. And it's just, it's inspirational.
On that, mic drop, and we're wrapping it up. Anyway, hold on before
okay,
I close.
Okay.
For those of you watching or listening, again, Grenae, thanks for being on. Reach out to her or any of her team members at Concord, and I'm sure they'd be happy to
100%.
Field any questions or things that came out of this podcast.
Yeah.
So thanks for coming on today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Mac and Blue Show, brought to you by Blue Wave General Contracting. Be sure to subscribe to the Mac and Blue podcast on your favorite podcast platform. Follow JJ Levinsky on LinkedIn and Instagram. Tune in every Monday